Hey, I'm Zale, host of Preconceived, a podcast that challenges the preconceptions that shape how we view the world. Preconceived examines both our approach to major life choices, but also our perspectives on issues to which we may have been overly conditioned towards certain opinions. Each episode features a different topic, with experts, researchers, and luminaries in their respective fields. We think you will especially enjoy recent episodes on polyamory, regretting parenthood, dopamine nation, and myths of the beauty industry. Find Preconceived wherever you get your podcast.
Hello, hello, everyone. This week on the podcast, Bridie and I sit down with Allie Iceman, who is an alternative relationships guide for couples and individuals exploring healthy non-monogamy. Loved this conversation. It was great. We dived into things like boundaries and the importance of boundaries, what boundaries are, what they're not, compersion. Love talking about compersion. Super fascinating every single time. We talk about relationship agreements. And my favorite part about all of this is that although we're talking about things that pertain to non-monogamy, a lot of the stuff that we touch on is really valuable for those who are monogamous. Allie is just an absolute delight. We loved this conversation, and you should most certainly get into following Allie on social media. All of her links are located in the description. And yeah, hope you enjoy this, and we will see you all on the other side. All right. Well, this is going to be an absolute delight. Today, we are joined by our new friend, Allie. Allie Iceman is an alternative relationship guide for couples and individuals exploring healthy non-monogamy. She offers concierge private guidance, online courses, and resources through her recently launched company, Passport to Pleasure, where she brings together over 8 years of experience as a leader, community organizer, and non-monogamy educator and practitioner, right up our alley. Allie,
never heard that one before.
I you know what? Didn't even mean to, but Allie, you're up all up in our alley. Thanks so much for joining us today. So nice to meet you. So nice to have you on the show, and really looking forward to talking about the work that you do. I guess like the first thing I'm kind of curious to know is we speak to so many people that are in the world of educating folks around sexuality or relationship dynamics. And oftentimes those people are coming into that space with lived experience. Sometimes people come into that space without lived experience. Not saying that there's anything right or wrong about that. But just curious, like what led you to choosing this as your career path to kind of help people navigate the sticky, muddy waters that oftentimes arise when trying to navigate healthy non-monogamy?
Thank you so much. And it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you both for having me. I mean, goodness, the journey, it began personally, I think, like so many of us. I was a serial monogamist for most of my life. I never went through the like cooties phase. I think my first boyfriend was in first grade or something like that. First kiss was a French kiss while his sister watched in the backyard.
Nice. Very exciting. Nice.
Voyeur my whole life. exhibitionist, I should say. But yeah, I would get into these relationships. They always lasted about the same amount of time. I was always single for about the same amount of time in between. I was only dating men at the time. I was very closeted for up until 30. And realized like, okay, I have this pattern now. Step one, I've got this pattern. Let's see what happens if I'm single for at least longer than that, you know, usual break that I have. Let's see what's on the other side of that. And the answer is all of the shit. All of the shit was on the other side of that. So I got to do a lot of personal growth and just looking at myself and what my needs were and where I was at. And then got into yet another, which ended up being my last monogamous relationship. I had tried broaching the subject of like bringing another person in, and it was always, you know, landed on, sure, we can have a threesome with another woman. Never ended up happening. But then I got into this relationship. This person traveled a good bit for work. I would join him when I could, but wasn't always able to. And so we reached an agreement that I told him, you know, I would really love when you're, you know, on the road one time and I can't join you, if you meet someone, you know, at the event or maybe in the hotel bar or something, just like send me a picture with consent, of course, and then have fun and just let me know how it goes. That would be really exciting to me. That turns me on. I didn't know words like compersion yet. I never really understood like why jealousy had such a bad rap. It turned me on. So one point he did meet someone, it just turned into, you know, conversation all night, which is great. And then another time he was gone, I had a friend coming into town. We had a sexual history, but we're very much just friends. So it was like the perfect, you know, safe opportunity. My partner gave me his green light, as he called it. And I had an amazing night with my friend, found out his last relationship had been open. We just had this really beautiful night. And all I could think about was connecting with my partner at the time. And I felt so in love with him, so excited. I called him the second I left my friend's place. And I just was like, babe, I just thank you so much. This is so validating. I feel so loved. I'm so excited to share with you. Like, what do you want to hear? Dead silence.
Oh.
And then I can't believe you did it. And just everything imploded. And of course, there were other issues in the relationship as well. And whether you're a monogamous, non-monogamous, whatever framework you're in, testing your partner is not okay. And whether it's a matter of he agreed to something that he then realized he couldn't manage or deal with later, that's still, you don't deal with it by imploding or that sort of, the way that went down was not great. So while I will say that was an important moment, what I realized is, okay, this is real. This is real for me. I need to explore this, but I need to do it on my own because I don't want to be responsible for any more emotional casualties on this journey. So it's just like, okay, I'm single now for as long as it takes. And I know there's communities out there and I don't know how to do that, but okay, I'm going to get on the apps and meet people. And I think it was like my second like Bumble date or something. And we had a lovely little afternoon delight and we're cleaning up and he goes, you know, there's this group you might be interested in connecting with. And that was his whole purpose in my life. We never saw each other again, but I got connected to my first, basically my first sex party community, and started exploring. And again, my first party was probably the second most validating experience of my life of just like, oh, this is real. There's community. This can be healthy. Like this is a part of who I am. It's not just this curiosity. I need to keep going. And this was, yeah, back in 2016 now. And it's just been an ongoing journey. When I get excited about things, I go all in. I actually went back to school to pursue a master's in clinical psychology. Ended up deciding, as much as I loved the program, there was just no material on alternative relationship dynamics. Couples therapy is very, very mononormative generally. And so I realized I was going to have to do all this self-study and immersion like on my own anyway. So let me save the like $100,000 and just do all that. And it brought me to, you know, being in a leadership role in these different communities and working unofficially with couples and now being able to launch Passport to Pleasure. I can offer this in a much more formalized way, the work that I've already been doing for years. I'm very excited. That was the short version.
I love it. I love it.
I'm super curious when you started. Okay. So when you left your final monogamous relationship and you started like meeting this community, did you have the desire to be in, because I think when people think about getting into like polyamory or, you know, ethical non-monogamy in some way, it's like what they might not even know what their vision of it is. But, you know, for example, I would think of someone with a serial monogamy tendencies, you might be like, well, I still want like the full time domestic, one partner. And then the ethical non-monogamous part will be that there's other sexual partners. Or did you kind of have a feeling like I'm just going to be single forever and have lots of sexual or like, you know, more casual, romantic partners. Like what was your vision of that when you kicked in?
I think for me personally, I do my best to come from a place of curiosity in my life. It's taken a great deal of self-cultivation to be able to have like a beginner's mindset about a lot of things. I say that like, nowadays I find my boundaries by hitting them head on, but it's taken me a lot of work to get to that place. I do not recommend that for new people. I think the best way to address your question is it's a conversation around boundaries and knowing your boundaries. And most people don't. We don't take the time to actually reflect and look at what those things are. And the other part of that conversation is what I see as a misunderstanding of what boundaries are for in regards to personal growth and relating. Boundaries are where you know where your edges are, edges that can be safely pushed. That doesn't mean jumping across them and making yourself feel unsafe, but knowing where those boundaries are enable you to know where your growth points are. Which ones can I push a little bit to see if maybe there's some room there? So really getting clear on what your why is. Why do you want to explore alternative relationship dynamics? I actually have a free resource on my site called What the Fuck Do You Want? Discover Your Big Why. It's a super easy little worksheet. It helps people really drop in, first of all, connecting just with themselves, and then really getting clear on what is that driving, that big why, because it's going to inform all of your decisions. It's going to inform the kinds of relationships you get into, the kinds of things you want to try. It's going to help you understand what your boundaries are and what your curiosities are and where you can bring your curiosities to meet your boundaries in a safe way.
Mm. I got a question about boundaries that I've never really thought about until right now, but, you know, I think that we've talked about boundaries a few times on the show over the years. And I think it's like, it's definitely one of those things that I feel like a lot of people, or at least there's a good portion of folks out there who haven't maybe put a lot of thought into what their boundaries are. And so then when they find themselves in a position where they need to, they build up these boundaries, they state them. But just curious, like what are your thoughts around bound? I want to be careful about how I say this because I don't want this to come across as like a sounding as though like someone's boundaries aren't valid. But how, you know, do you ever work with people or talk to folks about you know, situations where they feel like they have a boundary, yet their boundary might be unrealistic or maybe like a hindrance, simply because they view this boundary as something that is important, but in reality, maybe there's elements to that boundary that it's like the wall's too high or the wall's too thick. And it's like, it doesn't actually necessarily need to be that way. You can still formulate a boundary around this, whatever, this thing, this issue, this need, yet it doesn't have to be so grandiose because there's a part of you here that's creating a boundary that's almost unnecessary. And it just takes a little bit of like self-reflection to even realize that. Does that make sense? Like, you know, boundaries that get in your own way when they don't necessarily need to be.
It makes me think of strict. It makes me think of someone I know in my life whose answer to everything, first answer to everything is always no. And then they'll think about it and then they'll be like, well, maybe. But it's like their instinct is always just no, that's not for me. Mm-hmm. And you're like, well, why isn't it? And it's not something I've ever really explored. It feels arbitrary.
Mm-hmm.
That arbitrary is kind of the world. Totally. What I was thinking of while you were speaking.
Yeah.
I think if I'm hearing you correctly, what I'm hearing is a need to discuss what boundaries are. And I think we conflate a few different things when it comes to this conversation. The need to feel comfortable versus the need to feel safe. Those are not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Being a little bit uncomfortable is how we grow. Doing so in a safe way with people we feel safe with, when we feel safe with ourselves, that's how we promote personal growth. And that's what I mean when I say knowing where your boundaries are. They're not immovable walls. They're guidelines to understand this is where I feel safe. Let's look at this one today. Let's do this exercise and let's see if this one has any give. Again, safely, very, very important. So the other element is that an example I use as a boundary is, you know, what I choose to wear that makes me feel comfortable. Not what you choose, like, hey, I need you to dress a certain way to make me comfortable. That's not a boundary. Mm-hmm. That's control. Mm-hmm. So I get to choose if I want to relate to someone who presents themselves in a way that I don't like or I'm uncomfortable with. I get to choose if I want to engage or not with that person. That's a boundary. But telling them how to dress, eat, whatever, that's not a boundary. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. That's great.
Addressing what you're mm-hmm. talking about. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and again, like I think it's knowing yourself enough, your why, your safe zone, all of that enough to get slightly uncomfortable on a regular basis in your life and know the difference between discomfort and lack of safety. Mm. Again, very different.
Mm-hmm. That makes so much sense to me too, Jeremy, and how you're talking about how there's like the wall is thick and mm-hmm. it's like, here's mm-hmm. where it starts to get uncomfortable. And then over there on the other side of that thickness is where it starts to feel unsafe.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, for sure. I the other thing that sort of popped into my mind when you were kind of giving us your origin story there is compersion and this feeling that you had of like excitement around the idea of your partner having a good time with somebody else and wanting to be involved in that. That's something that, you know, I feel like a lot of people who aren't familiar with non-monogamy really, it just like fucking just, they just go offline. Like it just, it's too much. It's too much to like wrap their head around. So I'm curious, like your experience with that sensation or navigating that sensation, early on, was that something you always knew about yourself? You know, like that existed within you, this idea of like, oh, it would actually be kind of, you know, there's something that kind of turns me on about the idea of like knowing my partner is with someone else or, you know, something in that realm. Or was that something that just kind of came out of nowhere through the sort of like, you know, the path that you found yourself on leading you to that exact moment right then and there when having that conversation with your partner?
That's a great question. I didn't have any of the language around it. I had no idea like what it was. Again, I thought it was jealousy and I didn't understand like why jealousy had a bad rap. And I think it was really a product of my own personal growth journey, separate even from just, you know, relationship dynamics, but just exploring myself, learning to be confident in myself, where I'm at on my journey and all that stuff. And then that feeling of security within myself, which of course I'm a human being. I've had varying degrees of that, you know, depth of security, but being able to nurture that and feeling safe in my relationships, there's a lot that goes into creating the ability to have compersion. And it's important also to note that even though compersion is, you know, colloquially referred to as the opposite of jealousy, it doesn't mean people who experience compersion don't experience jealousy.
Right.
My first long-term relationship, non-monogamous partnership, I actually got to experience jealousy for the first time. And I was like, oh, this does suck. Yes. and it was, I again, did not understand this at the time, but we had a pattern of insecure experiences in the relationship. There was an insecurity in the relationship itself, which gives the opportunity for jealousy. I actually have a little video I just made. I'm excited to release, or I think I actually just released it a few days ago. There's like four main types of romantic jealousy and like where they come from. You know, insecurity, comparison or competition, fear of abandonment, and then distrust. So insecurity in self versus insecurity in a relationship. You get security in a relationship from recurring experiences that provide consistency. And when you have inconsistent, you know, your partner may or may not be there for you in the ways they need them to. Maybe they have acted out of integrity in the past. That can provide opportunity for an insecure relationship, which can create opportunities for jealousy. Mm. What I love in alternative relationship dynamics is the ability to explore compersion, but also not to run away from jealousy, to realize that jealousy is just information. It's giving you information. There's something to look at here and it's worth leaning into. But again, talking about, you know, patterns, right? Making sure that it actually, in regards to our boundary conversation we were just having a boundary crossed or pushing a boundary, that is something, you know, there has to be room for mistakes to create that trust and that understanding. But when the same mistake or the same boundary keeps getting crossed over and over and over again, you now have a pattern of distrustful behavior. And that's going to breed insecurity, jealousy, an unsafe environment, basically. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, totally.
A little bit.
Totally. Yeah. Turn Me On Podcast. We'll be back after this short break.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
I like from your own sort of experience with compersion, what do you typically say to people who, you know, you're at a dinner party and you tell them what you do, and maybe the conversation comes up of your own personal experiences in relationships that you've had, and, you know, like, say you shared that story that you shared with us, and the response is how like, what's your response to that? You know, like, what to people who just don't get it? What is that feeling? Like, what is it that derives a feeling of pleasure from knowing that your partner is deriving pleasure elsewhere?
I think the realistic understanding that I am not the source of all things for my partner or that partner any more than they are for me. It's an unrealistic expectation we have societally, but that's the case. And it also goes hand in hand with knowing that enables them to choose me and me to choose them over and over and over again, rather than an obligatory relationship. We have the misconception in our society that a label or a title is what gives us that security in our relationship. Oh, they're my husband. They're my wife. They're my, you know, whatever it is. Therefore, we're good. Versus I am actively choosing you every day. You are actively choosing me every day. You can leave at any time, but you're here. And so me having that confidence in myself and in our relationship, and again, built over time, enables me to just, like, I love them to experience joy and abundance in all areas and pleasure in their life. The same way that I want them to do well professionally. Mm-hmm. Like, I get just as much joy from them excelling professionally. Why would I not get just as much joy from them experiencing pleasure? Again, as long as we're in integrity, communication is happening. I'm still involved in whatever context. I'm still a part of it. And having that, just having that framework, it enriches whatever my primary partnership is. That just ability to have other experiences. I think it's a very normal thing to have mismatched libidos in partnerships. We're not all built the same. And we change over time. So there are certain things I can't physically do. And if I have a partner who really likes those things, I really want them to have that. I don't feel threatened. I know what I am and I'm not capable of. If it's, you know, as simple as this one, you know, physical sexual act that for some reason would then have them shift into that relationship instead of with me, then great. They weren't for me. That's fine. But I want my partner and my partners to have as much pleasure and joy and expansion and self-expression as possible, as I would like to have.
Yeah. I mean,
it, like, adds to what we have.
Totally. I've experienced compersion a number of times over the last like decade. And there's something very, very unique about that feeling. So like all the things that you're saying right now, for anybody who's not in a, who's not, and for anybody listening, which I'm sure is like most, are folks who don't live within an alternative relationship sort of dynamic, all the things you just said right there, you know, those are all things that most people are going to go, right, yes, of course, and I want that. Like, I want to feel those feelings of my partner. Maybe not necessarily like from a standpoint where they're deriving pleasure sexually from somebody else, but like all the other aspects of how you could want that similar thing in that person's life. Yes, I want that. I want to experience that. But when you really experience compersion, and again, I'm not saying specifically from like your partner fucking somebody else, but compersion in any facet, it is such a unique wonderful feeling. Like it is a really cool feeling.
Yeah.
Especially when you're not used to feeling it. Like when it happens and you see it and you go, oh, what? Like for me, I mean, you know, I'm speaking personally, but like it, I, every time I had that experience, I was like, wow, this is so cool. This is such a cool feeling. It's so different from anything else I've felt in this, this like, you know, this, this relationship that I'm in, but it's, I just, you know, it's really neat. And that's the thing that I love the most about having conversations with people who dedicate a lot of their time to educating people about, alternative relationship styles is like, there's so many elements to this that if we could just pour some of this over into the world of monogamy, it would, you know, there's a lot of really valuable lessons and a lot of really valuable things to pull from this.
Well, on a slightly different note, I want to just say, and I agree with everything you're saying, but when you first started talking about that, I don't like it's, there's almost sort of a relief that I don't have to be everything for one person and I don't need this one person to be my everything. I've definitely talked to people who are like, no, I want us to be each other's everything. And I wonder, like, in working with people, how do you, because that seems like a bit of a personal, I don't like want to insult anybody who feels that way, but
insult them. Let's go. But that's, let's get controversial here.
That seems like, that does seem like there's something in someone who's saying that, that is not feeling okay with either, whether it's being alone or being with themselves or satisfying themselves in life in some way, or feeling some sort of like, what is that in, from your perspective? And like, how can people start to work with feelings like that? Cause I think that's what a lot of people think marriage is.
Yeah, and I think it's, again, it goes back to your why of getting into any relationship dynamic, monogamous or non-monogamous, is why do you want to have the kind of relationship that you say you want to have? Why do you want someone to be your everything? And what does that mean? Exactly, literally, what does that mean on paper? Mm. Sexually, financially, emotionally, like, are you not going to have other friends then? Mm. Because those are emotional bonds. If you are going to have other friends, you are only allowed to have one friend per like area in your life. Just like, I'm not trying to be like snide or anything, but like genuinely, like it's super specific. Cause to your point, like the skills that you learn and the tools that you build through exploring non-monogamy are 100% applicable in monogamous dynamics as well. All the communication, conflict resolution. A big one that I work with my clients on is their relationship agreement. And again, whether you're non-monogamous or monogamous, you should have one of these. I'm not talking about a marriage contract. That is a merging of assets. It is a totally different thing. It has nothing to do with your relationship. The relationship agreement is actually addressing your unique relationship with your partner. Even if you have multiple partners, you would have a different one with each partner. It outlines your boundaries, you know, co-parenting, safer sex practices, just everything you would want to address and how you're going to relate to each other in this dynamic, which is just as applicable in monogamy. And it's something that it's a living, breathing document. It should be reviewed and changed as needed, et cetera. To say that somebody is, you want someone to be your everything. I'll use a term from business, a SPOF, single point of failure. Okay. It is something you want to avoid in any business that has longevity has done all of the due diligence to make sure there is no single point of failure in leadership, processes, everything. A relationship is actually no different. We like to think it's like very special and magical and untouchable, but you're still relating, you're in communication, you're in relationship with a romantic partner in the same way you would be with a business partner, a colleague, etc. So to have everything funneled into this one point that should anything change, go wrong, whatever it is, the whole house comes crumbling down. You're not setting yourself up, nor the person that you love most in the world, up for success. And that doesn't mean you don't love each other enough. It doesn't mean that these are separate conversations. You love someone enough to want to set yourselves up for success and longevity.
Yeah, I love that. Is there like a menu of like needs that you would give someone if they were like, I don't like, I don't know how to break that down. Like, I think as soon as we start getting more specific about that, we see our own holes and our own logic about it. But like, yeah, to break that down for someone who's encountering it for the first time, like, how might you introduce that? And what's that look like?
Yeah. So the initial way I work with my clients on that is there's two planes, like hierarchies of needs in the physical and sexual and emotional and romantic planes. And you kind of put them up like this. This is, you know, I attribute this wonderful work to Dr. Jhana, who created this concept, mm-hmm. but finding where you are on that graph in regards to your physical, sexual, or emotional romantic needs will help you understand what sorts of relationship dynamics might be a best fit for you at this time, because those needs can also change. And if you're in a partnership, getting to do that exercise with your partner, you can kind of see where each of you are, and you might be far apart, you might be really close, but knowing where you are on that, understanding what your needs are in at least those two realms, can get you started in how do we relate together? What kind of relationship can we build together to make sure that we each have the highest possibility for fulfillment and that this relationship has the highest possibility for longevity?
I love that. I've been thinking about my friendships in a different kind of way. And like, I just turned 40 and, you know, I'm thinking about how, what I want. I was looking at my wheel of life and like the areas in which I feel like I'm doing really well and like really like knocking it out of the park, and other places where I'm like, I've got some work to do there. And I know I would like my friendships to I'd like to elevate my friendships. I got some really great friends, but I don't know if I give enough. I don't know if I give them enough of what they need in a friendship. I always feel like, you know, like I want more quality time with them, but it just makes me think about having those conversations with the people that I also want to have long-term relationships with in like 40 years from now. I'd like to be sitting in rocking chairs next to some of these people. And I think that's a really great language to maybe to start. I never really thought about using sort of relationship agreement type terms to talk to my friends about that kind of stuff. So I'm taking that.
You're talking about are your minimums and really dialing in on them, understanding like what your basic needs are, how you perceive, like what sort of reciprocity structures work for you in your relationships. We have this idea that like, you know, transactional relationships, four letter word, horrible, like reciprocity is the most basic natural foundation of the universe that we're in. Everything is reciprocal in the universe, energetically, everything. So the idea that our relationships somehow shouldn't be, of course they should be. We should be nurturing each other to that next level, growing, challenging each other to be better versions of ourselves. Somebody placating you is not helping you to grow. That there's this idea that like, you know, not to say like your friends need to be, you know, emotionally supportive as well, ideally, but if they're always just telling you everything's fine when your whole life is on fire around you, like how wise of a reflection is that really? Yeah. And do they have your best interest actually in mind?
Well, it's almost like I've really done most of my personal growth in relationships with romantic partners. And a lot of my friendships haven't really had any conflict in them, or it's just all like, you know, as teenagers or whatever, it's like brushed under the rug. But like, yeah, when I'm in conflict in a romantic relationship, I am just like, this is so fucking uncomfortable. I hate it. Mm. But I always come out being like, well, I've worked, you know, at least I'm going to be better at this next time comes around, and I'm not so stuck in my thinking about this thing. But with my friendships, yeah, I don't think whatever sort of barriers or protective walls I have up, or maybe because I've been a serial monogamist, like to put all of that sort of on just a partner. They're the only ones that get to see like the worst part of me, the part that wants to fight, the part that fights dirty. That's where that growth has happened. But
you got to get into business with your friends.
That's you got it nailed. Yeah, that's what's going on.
Then you'll know. Then you'll learn.
Yeah, that's true.
Then they'll see.
Well, I love that you're sharing that. I mean, it sounds like you have more skin in the game is what I'm hearing when you talk about your romantic versus your platonic relationship. And that's something that's really love to talk about when it comes to non-monogamous relationship frameworks. Like there's this assumption that you know, polyamorous people or non-monogamous people, people with multiple partners are avoiding intimacy, are avoiding conflict, are avoiding those, you know, friction moments. Oh, it's tough over here. Let me pop on over to that relationship. I mean, I'm sure there's a few people, but that is by no means the norm. It is exactly what you're talking about. All of that personal growth that you're experiencing with your person. If you have three persons, if you have three primary part, whatever structure you're in, all of that personal growth is happening in each of those relationships. You're just like, expediting? No, yeah. It's like expanding your capacity for that growth and that the rapid nature with which that can happen.
Tell us about Passport to Pleasure. What is it? You know, like what, you know, you started it fairly recently, I believe, correct?
Yeah.
Tell us all about it.
Sure. I spent the second half of 2023 building this and then launched it in January. It's basically a formalization of the work I've been doing for the last 4+ years. And then just the space that I've been in for over 8 years now. But Passport to Pleasure, the idea is that I want to bring all of the resources, everything that I've learned firsthand, everything that I've studied, all of my resources and information together into one place to offer it to people who are stepping into this journey or who are experiencing friction along the way. I wish I existed when I started my journey in 2016. There is more information out there now than there was, but there aren't as many like places to just go to get, you know, all the basics to get started in a safe and empowered way. So I offer that through private guidance. I offer online courses, resources, things like that. And then I will be launching eco-luxury retreats as well for building community in addition.
Cool. Where are you thinking about doing the retreats?
Right? It's a tough one because I'm a travel bum. I love to get out and about in the world as much as possible. But that doesn't mean every single place in the world is welcoming to this sort of a thing. So it's making sure that we're in a place that people want to go. Of course, you know, it's still, there has to be an element of vacation in there, even though we're going to get some work done. But it also has to be a place that's safe. We can't risk, you know, I can't go to Bali. Would not be able to host this retreat in Bali. Right. We could go to jail. Right. So Whoa. That doesn't work.
Totally.
Oh yeah. So having an awareness. So there's places I'm looking at. I have some referrals that have been made, Mexico, Greece, a few other areas. So checking it out. Cause I also want it to be, I don't want it to be an obvious location, like a place people want to go, like say Greece, for example, maybe not necessarily the islands. Maybe we're in the jungle, like the forests and the mountains. So it's still a destination, but it's an unexpected one. So there's like a level of, just a level of specialness to it, because I want it to really feel like this, just retreat for the senses in every way, that you're in this like safe little cocoon, that we're really going to be able to explore everything in a way where you're feeling protected and empowered at the same time to try new things. The reason I call it Passport to Pleasure is something I've always seen that was always interesting to me, is everyone's ready to go on a trip, right? Like, oh, vacation, like I can't wait to see, like excitement, oh my gosh, adventure. But then when we start journeying inwards, there's this like retraction, this like fear, but it's still a journey. Like there's still expansion happening. There's still possibility. But in the outside world, it's like we have more availability for like the potential positive possibilities. And when we go inward, we're immediately worried about the worst case scenario. So I want people to have that same excitement and curiosity and sense of adventure that they have for their outer explorations, for their inner exploration.
And I guess, like, you know, to what I was sort of alluding to earlier, which is like a lot of the things that we've talked about here, although they're things that oftentimes are dealing with non-monogamy, so many of those things are also translate very easily over to people who are living through monogamous relationships, and like their skills that, it's funny, like as we were talking about it, I was just thinking about how, especially when you were talking about like friends, I was like, man, a lot of this resembles the work that I do in therapy with my therapist for me, talking to like how I talk to myself and how, you know, what are my values and what are my boundaries? This is, you know, we're talking about the same stuff, but it's like, it's the outward version of it. Like how we relate to other people, or how we want to, you know, express to other people. And so again, like I feel like so much of this is so valuable for people who aren't necessarily exploring non-monogamy. with that said, like, you know, is Passport to Pleasure, is that something that, is that an audience too, that you feel like could benefit from the resources that you have available through Passport to Pleasure?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I sit on the board for one of the most prominent play parties in LA. And something that I always make sure to be clear with folks is you don't have to be non-monogamous to go to a play party, and you don't have to go to a play party if you're non-monogamous. You don't have to decide to become non-monogamous if your orientation is monogamous, but these skills and these tools that you're learning are still applicable and will still benefit whatever relationship or relationships you get into. Mm-hmm. The thing to note too, it's important, is that non-monogamy can also be an orientation. Like, I've discovered it's actually my orientation. Mm-hmm. I thought that I loved fully in my other partnerships, and I loved them to the best of my ability. But opening up my relationship opened up a whole other level of capacity for me to drop in and connect deeply with my primary partner that I didn't even know was there. Mm. So now that I understand this part of myself, again, speaking to your point about like knowing yourself first and foremost, now I know how I have to relate in order to do justice to the relationship that I want to have with my primary partner. Mm. So for me, monogamy isn't a healthy option right now for me or another potential partner. It's not a matter of, again, loving someone enough or anything like that. These are not an either or thing. These are all relationship frameworks. We've just been told monogamy is the only one size fits all. If you can't do it, if you can't do this one right, you're wrong. And that's not the case. Mm. It's successful for about, I like to quote some numbers from California, median income divorce rates are over 70% now. Of the 30% that are remaining, 25% of them say they wish they were getting one. So that's 5% of the population that monogamous marriage is working for. Wow. Which is great. If you are in that 5%, rock the hell on. Mm-hmm. But that's 95% of the population that thinks there's something wrong with them because they can't fit into this one box, when there are so many other ways that you can healthfully relate and love other people and yourself.
I love it. Allie, I mean, this has been just an absolutely delightful conversation. You're clearly wading through waters with a lot of knowledge and wisdom behind your words, which is just like lovely to see. How can people find you? How can people stay up to date with the work that you're doing? How can they find Passport to Pleasure?
Sure. So the website is passporttopleasure.com, the number 2, passport, the number 2, pleasure.com. The same for handles on all social media, Passport to Pleasure, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, all the things, all the screens. And you can reach me directly on the website as well, or you can shoot me a DM on Instagram. Like, try to get back to everyone as quickly as possible. But yeah, I welcome any questions. I welcome any invitations. I'm happy to provide any resourcing and information that I can.
Awesome. This has been such a delight. Thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to sit and chat with us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, there we have it, folks. Hope you enjoyed that conversation that we just had. And thanks for listening to the podcast. If you want to support the podcast further, you can do that by leaving a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts, or you can simply rate the podcast on the Spotify mobile app. And if you want to support the podcast even further than that, which you can.
Wow. You can go to so kind and thoughtful and so generous. Thoughtful,
so generous. Go to patreon.com/turnmeon. To become a patron and help us keep this podcast afloat.
Well, if you want to reach out to us, turnmeonpodcast@gmail.com is always open for all of your messages. That's the best way to get in touch. If you have a question for us, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, if you have a recommendation for a guest on the show, or if you just want to send us a little love note, email, money transfer, all of that.
Sex toy.
You know, we're our email inbox is open to you.
That is it for this week. Until next week.
Why don't you go touch yourself?